Hi, this is Pastor and Bible teacher Warren Hoyt, welcoming you to another audio message of the Word of God, which, according to Acts 20:32, is able to build you up and give you an inheritance among God's people. Every year for the last 45 years plus, actually, I've been reading the Bible through every year. And I read about 4 or 5 chapters a day and spend a while meditating on them, and I look at different versions, including Spanish, and I look at the Hebrew and the Greek sometimes, and I just meditate on it and think about it, and it's always been a real blessing to my life. I think that's what's kind of kept me keeping on in the Christian life. And so recently I started doing the book of Genesis again. I've read it through, so many times, but I always really love Genesis. I don't know about you, but I just thought I'd bring a few messages from that book for the next few weeks, and I want to start this first one on chapter 1. I'm really only going to cover a couple verses, but I don't want you to be discouraged. I'm not going to take that long with all of it. I am on this first one, though. I might make a whole message out of a verse or two, and then other times I'll take several chapters maybe and make a message out of it. But anyhow, I want to start off with a little introduction. First of all, the title of the book, Genesis. It comes from the Greek version. I've taught about this sometimes in the past. Maybe you've heard me speak about the Septuagint version, which is the translation from Hebrew to Greek that was done around 250 to 200 BC. It's called the Septuagint because that's the Greek for 70. And there were 70 scholars who did the translation, or 72, some people say. But anyway, in that version, the Septuagint, that's where we get our title Genesis, because the book of Genesis in the Septuagint is called Biblos Geneseos. Biblos Geneseos. And so that means the book of generations. And they chose that because that expression is found 10 times in Genesis in Hebrew. In Hebrew, of course, it says Toledot. That's the generations. But anyway, you know, you find this expression, these are the generations of so-and-so. So that's where the title came from, Biblos Geneseos. Now, the first word in Hebrew is Bereshit, which means in the beginning. And that's what our Bible says in English. It also is what the Spanish Bible says. So, in the beginning, that's what this book is about. And it's fascinating because it certainly seems to me that all of us as human beings, we wonder where we came from, right? Where did the universe come from? Where did life come from? Where did we come from as the human race or as individuals? And so Genesis was given to us by God to answer these kinds of questions. That's an amazing thing if you think about it. God didn't leave us in the dark. He gave us a book with the answers to these kinds of life questions, you know, things that are so very profound and so important. And those of us who accept that the Bible is from God, we have a different perspective on life because of that. And those who don't know that the Bible is from God, or they don't accept it as such, they have a really different perspective. It really affects your outlook, what you do with the Bible. But anyway, Genesis tells the story of the beginning of the universe and of life in general, and humanity. Some might ask, how is it possible that the author knew what happened since nobody was there at the beginning? Of course, nobody was there at the beginning. But who was the author of Genesis? Well, the Bible itself tells us that the author was Moses, because it calls the first 5 books the books of Moses, or the law of Moses, or as the Jews call it, the Torah, which is a word, a Hebrew word that means law and also means instruction. The Bible tells us that Moses was the author. Like in John 1:17, it says, the law was given by Moses. And in Deuteronomy 31:24, it says that Moses finished writing all of the 5 books, and he put them in a scroll, and he ordered them kept in the tabernacle. And so we know he wrote it. And it was delivered over to Joshua, his successor. And that's why Joshua 1 says, this book of the law shall not depart out of your mouth, but you shall meditate in it day and night. And that's the way you'll be able to be obedient to what God is telling you to do, and you'll be successful. So if Joshua had the book of the law, we know Moses finished it. I say all that because some people have these theories, you know, these liberal folks, they have these theories that the book was written hundreds of years later by all these different authors and everything. But the Bible makes it pretty clear. Moses did it. He wrote it, and he gave it to Joshua. And, of course, we know about Moses himself, or as you say in Hebrew, Moshe, because of what the Bible tells us about him, mostly in Exodus. We know that he was an Israelite, but he was born in Egypt and born into slavery and oppression during a time when the Pharaoh actually ordered all the Israelites to kill their babies. Can you imagine the horror? This thing of abortion that we have today is not new, you know. Satan's been after life and after human life and after babies a lot of different times in history. So Moses' life was threatened from the very beginning. And, of course, his parents kept him for 3 months. They didn't kill him as they were ordered to. But you can't hide a baby. I have a little baby grandson, and I know one thing about babies. You can't hide them. They make a lot of noise. And so if the neighbors at all had to kill their babies and you kept yours and he was started crying, well, you know the neighbors are going to complain. Somebody's going to hear. Somebody's going to say something. So finally, the mother and father, you know, they put him in that little ark, a little sort of basket made out of reeds, and they had put tar around it to make it waterproof. And, you know, they put him out there on the Nile River, a river that had crocodiles, and they trusted him into the hands of God. And, of course, we know that God had a purpose for Moses, and so he didn't let him die. But rather, that little basket floated down to some rushes there, and Pharaoh's daughter actually saw the thing, had her servants bring it to her. They opened it. She saw the little baby. Her heart was touched, and she kept him and raised him as her own son. So it's so ironic that the evil, cruel Pharaoh who ordered the death of all these babies, kind of like Herod would do years later when he ordered the deaths of all the babies born when Jesus, around the time when Jesus was born, the very daughter of that cruel Pharaoh ended up finding one of these babies and saving him. And that's just the irony of how God works, huh? And so then we know the story of how Moses grew up and he eventually murdered a man, thinking that he was doing something good and protecting his people, but he had to flee to Midian, which is sort of up in what would be Jordan today, or maybe Iraq, or maybe the northern part of Saudi Arabia. And he lived there for 40 years until God revealed himself to him and told him he wanted him to go down to Egypt and he was going to use him. And so Moses went down, and you know the story. God used him to get Israel out of Egypt and get him to Mount Sinai, where he revealed these things. You know, he revealed the law to him there, the Ten Commandments and so on. We don't know how much of the five books were revealed actually on the mountain, or how much was revealed sort of in that general time period before and after Sinai when they wandered in the desert for 40 years. But it was during that period that God revealed to Moses what we read about in Genesis, about creation. And Genesis and all of the five books of Moses were revealed during that time. So then Genesis was supernaturally revealed to Moshe. Remember Moshe Dayan, the general, the Israeli general who won the victory in the Six-Day War? That's the same name, Moshe. And so God revealed that to him long after the events that Genesis describes occurred, okay? Because Moses got his revelation somewhere around 1400, 1440 BC. So we're talking 3,400, 3,500 years ago, right? And, you know, depending on whether you believe in a young earth or an old earth, the earth, you know, at least thousands of years before then, and possibly millions of years before then, all the creation account, you know, took place. And so, boy, I wish I knew how God revealed all this to Moses. Like, did he really talk to him? Or I don't know if you ever saw the Superman movies, you know, when they send him as a baby from the planet Krypton to Earth, right? And as he's a little baby flying in the spaceship, you know, there's this information just being beamed into his head, just bombarded. You know, he's being bombarded with all this information. I don't know. I wonder how God did it. Did he, like, upload it into Moses' mind, or did he talk to him? Did he show him visions? We don't know. But we do know that, for example, in Job 32:8, it says the Spirit of God communicates with the spirit of man and causes him to understand spiritual truth. So, that might seem silly to the unbeliever, but those of us who have experience with God, we believe this. We know God can do that. And 2 Corinthians 2:14 says that the ungodly person says it's foolishness, but to us who have the Spirit, it's not. Now, I believe the Bible is the Word of God, and I don't believe it because somebody told me to believe it or just because I was raised in church. I believe it because I had an experience with the God who is the author of the Bible, right? He revealed himself to me. He showed his power to me, and so that's why I came to believe it was his Word. And like I said at the beginning, I've been reading it for 45 years, and I just can't imagine what life would be like without it. God speaks to me through it. He edifies me, encourages me, keeps me going. And besides, it's just fascinating, right? I just love the Word of God. And I believe that he's called me to preach it and teach it as much as I can for the rest of my life. I sometimes feel like that most of churches, at least where I've been, most churches kind of preach a text here and a text there. I would like to really teach more of the whole thing. What does it mean? Instead of like using it as a devotion, like to encourage you today. You know, what's God's word for you today? Don't be burdened today. Be happy, you know, that kind of thing. I want to talk about more what it means. But anyway, let's get started then. Genesis 1, and I want to just read the first two verses. Genesis 1, 1 and 2. It says, as you all well know, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth, and the earth was without form and void, and darkness was on the face of the deep, and the Spirit of God moved on the face of the water. So in the whole first section, you know, always in a story, you have a main character. Well, this whole first section of God's Word, God himself is the main character, the person who's doing all the action. He's creating everything that is. And it's interesting, the Bible nowhere attempts to prove the existence of God. It just takes his existence for granted. In fact, in Psalm 14:1, it says, anybody who says in his heart there is no God is a fool. And if you got a reference Bible, it usually has a little reference note there, and it says, fool here means a morally deficient person, not a dummy, not an ignoramus, but a morally deficient person. There's something wrong with you morally if you don't believe there's a God. Hebrews 11:6 says, without faith, it's impossible to please God because it's necessary that he who approaches God believe that he is there and that he's a rewarder of those who seek him. And so from this very first couple verses, we learn the absolutely most important fact in all of human existence, really. You know, we take it for granted, but it's the most important fact in all of existence, in all of history, that God is the origin or the source of everything there is. Therefore, God is the center of the universe. God's the most important person in the universe. God's the purpose of our lives. And if we learn that, if we learn that everything is his and everything came from him, including ourselves, and if we learn to see him as the most important thing, the center of the universe, you know what? We'll be on our way to living life as we should. That's what I've discovered. So God created everything else. You know, that's just a fantastic statement if you consider it. He made everything there is. And he did so in the beginning. And I would add, as the Latin says, ex nihilo. That's a Latin phrase that means from nothing. So he did everything in the very beginning, and he did it from nothing. Now, since ancient times, there's been difference of opinion about whether or not the universe had a beginning, just like there's differences about everything today, you know. Liberal, conservative, right, left, whatever. Even scientists, they differ on things. I just saw some business people on TV. They differ on taxes, what they should be, and so on. And so there's always been differences of opinion about whether the universe had a beginning. Even the great philosopher Aristotle, he thought that the universe was eternal. And there's always been those who thought that. I suspect that the majority of people, even in ancient times, believed that the universe had a beginning. Of course, they believed that gods or titans or some kind of forces created it, or they formed pre-existing matter into what is now. It's interesting and ironic that modern science really developed under the influence of Christianity and the Bible. I can prove that. I've read lots of books that prove that. And I'm not talking about, you know, did other cultures discover things, or were they brilliant, were they as smart, or anything like that. I'm just talking about the modern scientific method and so forth developed in the Christian worldview. But even that being said, There have always been those who accepted the testimony of the Bible and others who didn't. Some believed the universe had a beginning and others believed that, no, it had always existed. But it seems to me that kind of the majority of scientists and physicists and so forth sort of came to the opinion that it was eternal, by the 19th century, it seems to me. But then in the late 19th century, in the early 20th century, that's when various mathematicians and scientists, including Albert Einstein, by the way, in various parts of the world, Russia, Germany, England, various people. It's kind of like the jet engine. It was discovered, it was invented in several places at a time, at once. And various things are like that. It seems like God kind of allows people to discover something. But in the late 19th, early 20th century, these different mathematicians and scientists began to come to the conclusion that the universe had a beginning. And they came to that conclusion scientifically, mathematically. It took a while. And some of them didn't even want to accept it. Einstein didn't want to accept it. But over a process of decades, which you can read about in books like I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist by Frank Turek and Norm Geisler, or various others, you can find out about this. There was quite a few different discoveries that came one after another. One of the latest being in 1989, they launched the Kobe space probe that went out and kind of measured the background radiation of space. And that was kind of like the most recent thing that really, really gave strong evidence that the universe did have a beginning. And they called it the Big Bang. Now, to date, there are atheists and skeptics who still don't like that idea because they know that if you say everything had a start, then you have to look for the cause of everything. And they know that if nature began at a certain point in time, well, then something beyond nature had to create it, right? And that's called supernatural. And they just get real nervous around that word. They don't like that word, supernatural. And so to this day, there are atheists and skeptics who are desperately looking for other theories, another kind of theory they can use to disprove the idea of a beginning. This Lawrence Krauss, he has a book about how when it says nothing, everything came from nothing, that doesn't really mean nothing and so on. And people talk about what's called the multiverse, that maybe there were lots of universes. And so there's an infinite number of universes. So one like ours just had to develop and so on. And then there's a lot of talk of quantum mechanics, quantum physics. And maybe that'll give an explanation that'll prove there wasn't a beginning. But so far, and by the way, let me recommend a book I've been reading. It's called Return of the God Hypothesis by Stephen Meyer, Dr. Stephen Meyer. Really good book, pretty heavy, pretty scientific and complicated at times. Sometimes it's way over my head, but I'm reading through it and I'm getting the gist. But the point is that so far, nobody's been able to refute the fact that the universe had a beginning. Most people have come to accept that. They're trying to find another theory, but nothing really satisfactory has been found yet. And of course, as believers, we say, look, if you just believe what Genesis says, you wouldn't have all this trouble. But it's an interesting story to me how all these different scientists and engineers and mathematicians and physicists and so forth, astronomers all together, came to the same conclusion by scientific methods. They concluded what the Bible had already taught for well over 3,000 years, that the universe had a beginning. Some people even wrote in their writings and said that they did not want there to be a beginning, because they knew they'd have to then think about what was the cause of the beginning, and that would naturally bring the idea of God into the picture, and they just didn't want to talk about God. Isn't that something? It's sad, really. Ironically, they resisted these discoveries, even though the discoveries were the result of science. It's funny, these days of COVID and all, science doesn't always mean what we think it means. I'm not sure that word means what you think it means. Science is no longer impartial as it used to be. It's become political and so forth. And that's the way it was in this case. These guys had an agenda. So they weren't just impartial scientists who wanted to follow the truth wherever it led. But no, they were rebellious, sinful human beings like all of us are. And the idea of God made them feel uncomfortable. And so they had a different agenda and they tried desperately to come up with another explanation for things. And it really reminds me of how recently, you know, there's been some stuff on TV that I've seen that prove that, like hydroxychloroquine, for example, and ivermectin were drugs that could be effective against COVID. But just because President Trump said that, man, big tech and the media wouldn't allow that out there. And the other day I saw an interview with an immunologist who teaches at Harvard, who said it's dangerous for young men to receive the vaccine because there's a large increase in a rate of myocarditis in young men who receive this vaccine. And so big tech took it down. YouTube took it down. And this is an immunologist from Harvard. You would think, for crying out loud, isn't this guy? I mean, it said his information was misleading. It was false. Well, can't we hear what scientists and doctors are telling us? No, and apparently not anymore. That's a whole nother subject. But anyway, the point I want to make now is the universe, the Bible tells us here, everything there is, matter, energy, time, and folks, even space itself, everything had a beginning. And what or who was the cause of all this? Think about it. It's so fascinating, you know? The cause had to be immaterial. Why? Because it brought matter into existence. So there wasn't any matter. So whatever caused matter had to be immaterial. The cause also had to be eternal, or at least outside the context of time as we understand it, because there wasn't any time. The cause brought time into existence. The time also had to be, and this is the really weird one to think about, spaceless. Why? Because there wasn't any space. The cause created space. Space and time have a beginning, folks. And it's hard to imagine. But, astronomers tell us that space is actually expanding outward. It's getting bigger and bigger every second. And it's expanding rapidly. All the galaxies far away from us are zooming away from us faster and faster every day. And so you can calculate backwards in time and see that everything started from one point. Everything started from one point in the distant past, and everything began from nothing. So the cause, even of space, had to exist without, or you could say outside, the context of space as we understand it, that's for sure. Because we're only aware of three dimensions, right? Height, width, and length. But those dimensions apparently didn't exist before the beginning. So their cause, with a capital C, had to exist outside those dimensions. I know it's hard to follow, but I hope you can follow me. It's just fantastic to think about. So look, here's the way I've learned over the years is that there's only four possibilities regarding the universe. If you can think of another one, please let me know. I'd like to know, but as far as I know, these are the only four possibilities. Number one, the universe is eternal. It's always been here. As I said, lots of people believe that over the years. But as we've seen, modern developments of science and so forth and observation, things like the laws of physics, the laws of thermodynamics, they seem to convincingly show that the universe can't be eternal. It can't be. Why? Well, for example, say you come into a room and there's a hot cup of coffee in there. It's steaming, right? What do you know about that cup? Could it have been brought in a year ago? No. Why? Laws of thermodynamics. Heat always dissipates. Energy deteriorates. It goes away. So if the coffee cup's hot, somebody must have just left it there, right? Well, expand that out to a larger object. Think about the sun. The sun is burning something, right? I don't understand how it burns, but it seems to me it's a nuclear furnace, right? So it's consuming some kind of fuel, right? Well, if it had been burning from eternity past, it would have already burned out long ago, wouldn't it have? And so would all the other stars, but it hasn't. So it can't be eternal. So that's number one. Second possibility is that the universe is an illusion. And believe it or not, that's what Hindus, Buddhists, the so-called New Age, and the Eastern pantheistic perspective, that's kind of what they say. The word they use to express it is Maya. They say everything is Maya, and that means everything's an illusion. But, I just don't think that's very believable for folks like us with a Western mindset. Number one, look at everything in the universe functions like clockwork, if you noticed, right? I mean, like the satellites they send out, they know where the planets are going to be or the moon's going to be or whatever, how long it'll take to get there. They know what kind of an orbit you have to put it into. Everything's like a clock. Comets, you know, we know when they're going to come, and movements of stars and planets, all that stuff. And all the natural laws or the laws of physics and all that, they're so predictable. And things about math, you know, mathematical principles. I just recently took a course in geometry. It's so fascinating, you know. How could it be an illusion if all of us see the same illusion? You know, illusions are things that you have if you have mental problems, right? And other people, you can say, look, don't you see that angel over there? Everybody goes, just stay right there, okay? We're going to make a call and some people are going to come and take care of you, right? But if everybody sees it, it's not an illusion, right? But millions and millions of people say it's all an illusion. Well, how can we all see the same illusion? And what's more, how come people who claim it's an illusion, they don't live like that? I mean, they don't say, I can walk out across the freeway because it's all an illusion. You know, Mack trucks, they're not going to hurt me. They're just an illusion. Nobody does that, right? And the funny example I think of all the time about this is one time I was in Denver in a park, Denver, Colorado, and I was witnessing. And I met this Tibetan Buddhist because the Tibetan Buddhists were there protesting how China took over their country and everything. So I talked to him and everything. And after a while, I said to him, but let me ask you something. Why are you protesting China? He said, what do you mean? They took over our country. I said, yeah, but don't you guys believe that everything's an illusion? You should have seen his eyes darting around. He knew he was caught, you know. They don't live like it's an illusion. Okay, the third possibility is that the universe just sort of sprang into existence by itself. And you wouldn't believe this, but there's actually PhDs, this Lawrence Krauss, and various people, actually, various seemingly brilliant people actually trying to say this nowadays. Well, it created itself. It in fact, laws of gravity and all would make it to where it had to create itself. Well, that just seems to me to take more faith than believing in God ever would take. I never saw anything come from nothing of you. And besides that, the physicists tell us that the universe has been fine-tuned. And if it hadn't been fine-tuned from the very beginning, it couldn't support the life that it supports. And so again, there's people desperately seeking for another answer. They don't want to accept the idea of God. So they talk about the multiverse, or they talk about, well, quantum mechanics, quantum physics. That's going to explain it someday. But I say, look, you know, even if there's a multiverse, we have no evidence for it, number one. But even if there was one, wouldn't that need a cause too? Come on, you're just pushing the thing back. So the fourth possibility for the existence of the universe, how come there's something here rather than nothing, is that either a force or a person caused it or created it, right? A force or a person, okay? So in the movie Star Wars, you have the idea of the force, right? And that's this energy which penetrates us and controls us and so on, as Obi-Wan said. But it's not a person, right? Well, that's kind of Hinduism in another form is really what it is. Hinduism teaches that there's millions of gods, but the ultimate power behind everything is really not personal, you know? And in pantheism, which says that everything is God, that is basically a Hindu view, an Eastern view. God is the universe. The universe is God. Everything's God. God is everything. I'm part of God. You're part of God, and so on. But if, as science now says, the universe is not eternal, well, then pantheism doesn't work because matter, energy, and even space and time had a beginning, right? So pantheism says, you know, we're all part of God, we're all part of the universe, but the universe had a beginning, so what did we do, create ourselves? So it doesn't work very well to say that there's just this energy or force that created us. Energy didn't exist before the creation, before the beginning. And besides that, look at, you know, we're all people, we have personalities and so on. How is it possible that something impersonal created that, you know, created personality? You know, you can't get more, something can't create something that's more than it is itself. So if it's impersonal, how can it create personality? How can something without intelligence, you know, a force doesn't have intelligence. It may be powerful, but it doesn't have intelligence. How could it create intelligence? And so if something impersonal created the universe, that just doesn't make sense, right? I mean, where did our personalities come from? How come we know it's wrong to kill somebody? We value human life and so forth. How come it is that human beings have always been religious? They've always thought there were gods and they've always sought for something to worship. Why do so many of us seem to just instinctively believe in life after death? I mean, every culture has a belief in life after death. Besides that, possibly even more devastating to the impersonal argument is this, simply this. I say, look, only a person can make a decision to create matter and energy. They don't make decisions. We're going to make something. You know, the electricity in my house doesn't say, let's make a table. You know, matter and energy don't change. They just continue in their status quo, their state that they're in. They don't do anything. So it has to be a person to create. So for that reason, it just seems to me that the most logical answer is that the cause of the universe and of our lives was a person. And this person had to be immaterial. Sounds kind of like a spirit, wouldn't you say? And this person had to be eternal, existing outside of time and space. Had to be a person who was supremely powerful, supremely intelligent. Kind of sounds like God to me. What do you think? And of course, I already mentioned what's called the fine tuning of the universe. And you know, that's a difficult thing. I'm wrestling with it, but I don't think I really fully understand it. But somehow the physicists say that everything had to be set with absolute precision from the very beginning for this to be a life-supporting universe. I get the gist of what they're saying. I can't really explain it. But one thing I observe is that there's design and purpose in everything around us. And to me, that's a similar kind of an argument. I was at Sam's the other day, and you know, we had to talk to the AT&T rep there. And so they have all these huge TV screens right there by her place where she works. And so we're looking at all, I'm watching all these videos on these huge big screen TVs while she's talking to us. And you know, they always have these fantastic videos of nature, the ocean, waves, mountains, reefs, birds, fish. You know, there was even this one scene that you kept seeing over and over of this bright, beautiful yellow flower with a bee that was black and yellow. And it was magnified huge, you know, many times. And this bee is collecting pollen and everything. And you look at that, and you look at all those kind of videos, and you just see design and beauty everywhere you look. I mean, it's just fantastic. So to me, it's just very logical to believe. In fact, it's inescapable to me. I don't understand how you can escape the idea that there has to be a great artist who made all this beauty. There has to be a great designer. Right? And I mean, like, I look at the fact that, for example, the human body has a heart and a circulatory system, and they have a function. They pump my blood through my body, and we know that it carries oxygen and nutrients to all my cells and organs. You look at that, and it's just fantastic. Who could make something like that? You can see that it has a function. It has a function. So for something to have a function, it doesn't, like, automatically decide to have a function. Things that have functions, you know, machines, systems, any kind of system, you can see that somebody designed it. And we have so many systems in our body, the bones, the skeletal system, the muscular system, the nerves, the brain. Whenever you see some kind of a system, you know, it's been designed by some kind of executives or some kind of engineers or whatever. You see a machine, you know that it didn't form by itself. It just can't happen. And beyond that, what about information? That's a whole other subject. But I mean, look at information. If you see a book and it has all this information in it, either whether it's a story or whether it's a factual book about history or whatever, that those letters, they're a code. So you don't look at that and say, wow, look at that. Those marks formed on the page. No, there had to be an author. He's saying something in this book. And the same is true with a code. Maybe if you hear Morse code, beep, 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 you know, it's a system that communicates, right? Or a computer program, or the greatest of all, of course, is DNA. In every cell of every living organism, there's this code with billions of bits of information. And let's face it, look, only a mind, only a person writes code, right? So the point is, you know, there's a cause. There's a creator who made all we are and all we see around us. And he's God. He's the supreme being. He's the creator and the designer, the author of life. He gave existence to everything that there is, and he continues to sustain everything. It's his power, his wisdom, his intelligence that have created all this. And they've got to be beyond human imagination. And so he is the center of the universe, the cause of everything. He existed before all things. And Colossians 1:17 says he holds all things together. And that includes you and me. He created us. He holds our lives in his hands. Some today, you know, they try to say, and it's really silly, but they try to say, well, the laws of the universe are the cause of everything. The laws of the universe. And it's just silly to me. You know, it's a desperate attempt, I think. Because, you know, like take a book, like I mentioned earlier. A book is not explained by the laws of chemistry, for example, that control ink and paper. Same way with a car engine. You know, you don't say, well, that's explained by the laws of internal combustion. No, the laws describe what happens with it, right? But the laws didn't make it. An author is the explanation of a book, and of course, a printing company and so on. An engineer in a Ford factory or a Toyota factory or whatever is the explanation of an engine. There has to have been a mind, an intelligence behind these things. That's the only explanation that's sensible. And so in the same way, in the universe, when we look at the universe and we look at life and all the things that are in the universe, we have to understand that behind everything, there has to be a person, an intelligence, and a supernatural mind, the mind of God. Nothing else can explain why we, for example, have minds and intelligence, why we are people with values, a sense of morality. We have dreams, we have capabilities. John 1:1 says that in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. And of course, that word translated word there is logos in Greek, and that's where we get the word logic. And so when it says in the beginning was the Word, it's saying in the beginning was the logic, the reason, the mind of God. People try to say that back of everything is matter and energy. Oh no, back of everything is a mind, friends. Mind came first, and it was an immaterial spirit mind, and he created everything else. So this is a God-centered, God-created universe. It was all made by him and for him, and that includes you and me. And this God who did this is incredibly powerful and wise, far beyond we can even imagine. He does everything with a purpose. Of course, there's a lot we don't understand yet. But for this message today, I just want you to let the reality of God, his power, his wisdom, his love, just fill your heart and mind and inspire you. You know, the world and the devil, they try to quench faith in God, but they really have an uphill climb. Because if you just look around, you know, everything around us, the whole universe, is evidence of God. If you even just think about your own mind and body, there's just amazing evidence. There's an amazing, intricate design, the design of God. Everywhere you look, his fingerprints are all over the world. They're all over you and me. He made us, and he has provided everything we need. And our purpose here on earth is just to look for him and find this wonderful God, the Almighty Father, creator of heaven and earth. I want to wrap up with just a couple more scriptures. Psalm 19, 1 through 4 says, "The heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament announces the work of his hands. One day he communicates his message to the next day, and one night he declares wisdom to the next. It's not a language of words. His voice is not heard, but their voice has gone out through all the earth, and their words to the ends of the world." In other words, you don't hear an audible voice, but the glory of God is seen in all the things that he's made. And then the last verse, Romans 1:20, has a similar message. Paul says, "The invisible things of God, his eternal power and deity," his divinity now, "has been seen through or since the creation of the world, being understood by the created things that we have around us." So again, the point is, God has revealed himself through creation. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. He's the center of everything. He's the creator and sustainer of everything. And that is the main point of Genesis 1. Till next time,
May the Lord richly bless you.
Thanks for listening today. I hope the message was helpful to you. If I can do anything else for you, pray for you, or answer a question, or interact with you in some way, please email me. You can see the information on the website if you scroll down. Also, if you'd like to support this ministry, you may do so on the website or contact me for further details. Thank you.